Got it.
You recording?
Okay. Okay, we are back in open session. We are on section number three, our informal interviews. We are on item number two, the informal for Kelly Ale, DBM, case 2435. So this is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Ale in case number 2435. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Ale, please introduce yourself and your attorney.
I am Kelly Ale.
And David Sol, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Ale.
Great, thank you. Dr. Ale, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restriction. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you have submitted. If you have any additional materials to submit, you may do so at this time.
We have no additional materials.
Okay. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. Thompson, would you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Sure, yes. On June 5th, 2023, Pickles, a 6-year-old female domestic short-haired cat, was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. The procedure was performed and the cat was discharged later that day. On June 11th, 2023, the cat was presented to an emergency facility due to lethargy and frequent trips to the litter box. Diagnostics revealed the cat had a septic abdomen. Hospitalization and surgery were recommended. Complainant elected to humanely euthanize the cat. Necropsy report revealed the cat's septic abdomen was likely due to surgical contamination.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Ale, at this time, I would now like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Dr. Ale, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Thank you. Before she provides her response, I just want to give a procedural summary. This case went to the investigative committee on January 9th, and they unanimously recommended that the complaint be dismissed with no violation. As is your right, you did not accept the dismissal recommendation when you reviewed this case on February 21st, and instead offered Dr. Ale a consent agreement that included a violation for allegedly, and I quote, missing an infection at the time of the spay surgery. As will become clear to you here today, Dr. Ale did not miss an infection at the time of the surgery because there were no signs of infection at that time. And therefore, Dr. Ale exercised her right to decline the offered consent agreement. She would now like to respond to the summary that was just read and to address the concern that some, but not all of you had about a possible infection.
Thank you. Thank you all. And in preparation for today's hearing, I listened to the transcript of your February 21st, 2024 review of the committee's dismissal recommendation. Some of you felt that in retrospect, I should have either treated this patient at the time of her spay with antibiotics, submitted the uterus for histopathology, or preserved the uterus to submit later if the patient developed problems. Hindsight is a great thing, and as veterinarians, it's very easy to look at a case after we know the outcome and say that something should have been done differently. In this matter, I ask that you judge my handling of this case based upon the following information that I had at the time. First, even though I described the patient's uterus as abnormal, I would not describe it as atypical. As an experienced spay-neuter veterinarian, I consider any uterus that is in the stages of estrus, cystic endometrial hyperplasia, pregnancy, postpartum, or pyometra as abnormal. However, all of those conditions are commonly seen, especially when you do a large number of spays as I do. I've done approximately 50 to 60,000 spays and neuters over my career, and I would estimate that at least half of those have been spays. As a result, I am very familiar with what pyometras look like and how to differentiate a pyometra from cystic endometrial hyperplasia or estrus. And I'm definitely on the alert for these conditions when I'm spaying a six-year-old cat, as I was in this case. With this patient, there was no pus or fluid in her uterus, none whatsoever. The uterus was uniformly thickened with no masses and no fluid. Its appearance was consistent with either estrus or endometrial hyperplasia in a six-year-old cat that had had multiple heat cycles. It would be poor antibiotic stewardship to treat estrus or cystic endometrial hyperplasia with antibiotics, as both of these conditions are sterile. And it is not the standard of care to treat either of these conditions with antibiotics. I have provided you with page 853 from the textbook Canine and Feline Endocrinology and Reproduction that states that cystic endometrial hyperplasia is a sterile condition and there is no recognized therapy for it. So therefore antibiotics would not be effective for that. As for submitting the uterus for histopathology, I feel that this would be an unnecessary expenditure of clients' funds unless I felt a mass that created suspicions of neoplasia, which I did not in this case. The truth is there was no compelling medical reason to recommend submission of the uterus for histopathology based upon its gross appearance at the time. It is also not the standard of care for spay and neuter practitioners to preserve every in-heat or hyperplastic uterus that is removed from apparently healthy patients in the event that a problem develops later, as was suggested during your review. Also, I hope you have reviewed the necropsy report because the pathologist's notes on page 5 state that, quote, bacteria and suppurative inflammation was not detected in the lumen of the vagina, cervix, and remnant uterine body, unquote. In other words, he saw no signs of an ascending uterine infection during his postmortem. In his emails to me, pages 29 and 30, which you should have, the pathologist stated that he considered pyometra while conducting the necropsy. And I quote from him, which is why I was so thorough with my examination of the genital tract, including gross examination and microscopic examination of the vagina, cervix, and remnant uterine body. In those sections, active bacterial metritis, pyometra in parentheses, were not detected, unquote. And in regards to the bacteria that were seen microscopically at the end of the uterine stump, he stated, quote, the bacteria were external to reproductive lumens, unquote. Also on page 28 of the emails between he and I, the pathologist makes a comment about the common cutaneous location of strep canis and states, quote, once the abdomen is open and there is movement in and out of the space through the skin, any bacterial contamination is possible, as has occurred in this case, unquote. So he's saying that the bacteria came from the cat's skin, not from the uterus. I therefore failed to see how I could be found in violation of the Practice Act for missing an infection when there were no gross signs of infection at the time of surgery. Lastly, I want to address something else that I heard during your review that does not relate to the possible violation. One of the board members commented that it was very concerning that I did not take action when the patient's owner called the clinic with concerns about her pet following the spay. Please keep in mind that at that time I worked as an independent contractor for this clinic and was only working there 2 days a week. In that regard, I was never informed that Pipples' owner had called with any concerns after the spay. I was also not informed when her owner came in and told the clinic manager that Pipples had been euthanized. The very first time that I was informed of any problems with Pipples was when the clinic received the necropsy report 5 weeks after her spay. Had I been notified of a concern, I would have been happy to call the owner. The clinic manager and staff had my personal phone number if they needed to reach me on days that I was not there, and there were times when I would come in on my off days to call clients back. I would never fail to return a client's call, especially if it concerned a patient having problems after one of my surgeries. But again, I was not informed that the owner had called with any concerns, or I would have called them back. I am now available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. I'd now like to ask board members if they have any questions for Dr. Ale.
Dr. Ale, I just want to say thank you for your overall review of the case. It's very thorough, and I appreciated the questions that you went into detail asking the pathologist as well. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Well, you can both step back. We have the complainant's mother here. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tara? Okay. If you would like to come forward, and then please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Tara Carvo.
Okay. Tara, I would like to swear you in now. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. You can go ahead and address the board.
I just want to further say, as a previous conversation, my daughter couldn't be here. She had to work. She couldn't get the day off. In a previous conversation that she had with Alchemy, she stated that the pathologist was incorrect. And I find that, and I stated this last time, I think it's wrong to say a pathologist is wrong. I will point out, it says, therefore, bacteria contaminated the abdominal cavity during the surgical procedure. I understand. I'm in medical. I get it. At the end of the day, we can't blame the staff for not contacting her. There was numerous phone calls. I know the emergency vet called them. I find it hard to believe that nobody bothered to call the surgeon who did the pickle surgery. I find that so hard to believe, because then at that point, we should be holding everybody accountable. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, the licensed provider should be the one held accountable. She didn't contact me and leave a message until after the necropsy results. I'm sorry, there was numerous phone calls, numerous messages to try and get something. I think that while clearly nothing was done intentional, somebody needs to be held accountable, and I ask that she be held accountable. That's the right thing. We're humans, we make mistakes. And I will say, I know you don't.
Ma'am, I need you to address the board, not for them.
I know she does not feel that that uterus should have been sent out because it's not regarding money. We paid thousands of dollars to try and save her, paid for a necropsy result. Who is it to somebody else to make a financial decision for us? Because if in fact she would have said, hey, we could do this, just to see, the answer would have been yes. If antibiotics would have been offered, or if I could have known to ask for them, I would have, because it's preventive. No matter what the infection was at this point, because you have her work, you have the pathologist, there's no way to confirm how that cross-contamination happened. There's no way. We don't know if it came from pickle skin. We don't know if it came from a dirty instrument. We don't know. There's no proof of that. What I do know is that day, never once did we get a phone call to pick up our cat. And we had two cats that day get spayed. One neutered, one spayed. We brought Pickles home. She was so erratic. I couldn't keep her. I had to keep her contained in a kennel. Whereas our other cat, it was like nothing ever happened to him. Numerous phone calls. I just, I just ask that you consider holding her accountable. Because at the end of the day, who am I holding accountable? Because where do I go from here?
Thank you, and I'll have you stay there because I want to see if any board members have any questions for the complainant.
No questions, but I'm sorry about your loss.
Thank you, I appreciate
yes.
that.
Yes.
Okay, no so questions. No questions, so you can go ahead and step back. And then Dr. Ayle, do you or your legal counsel have any additional questions or remarks you would like to make?
We do, sorry for your loss. It is not standard of care to prescribe antibiotics in every spay and neuter. As the board well knows, there's a risk of developing resistant bacteria strains by doing that. Everything that Dr. Ayle did in this case was in compliance with the applicable standard of care. There were no obvious signs of infection, such as she should have done anything above and beyond what she did. And we therefore submit that the investigative committee got this right and that this complaint should be dismissed. I appreciate the concern that you expressed, but I think the doctor took it upon herself to do research and provide you the information that you needed to address the concern that you had in this. And unless you have anything?
Yes, I'd like to say a couple things. When I spoke with Alchemy, this is my first time seeing Tara, but Alchemy and I spoke several times, sometimes in person, sometimes on the phone. I never said that I didn't believe the pathologist. I agreed with her that Midwestern is a very reputable organization. I never said I did not believe the pathologist, but that I did have questions about the findings because of the type of bacteria that was found. And I also did not make the decision to not send out the uterus because of the owner's finances. I never thought it was necessary to send out. So why would I send out a uterus if I didn't feel there was a good reason? That doesn't make sense to me.
Have you recommended that in the past?
No. Okay. No, I have not.
Okay. Are there any final questions from board members? Okay, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. Thompson.
Yes, so in reviewing the consent agreement that was offered, it specifically said that the respondent was in violation of missing an infection. And if we do go back and look at the information that was provided by the pathologist, there was no evidence of infection of the stump that was left in the uterus. So to say that we missed an infection when, yes, the uterus was enlarged, but again, you have that with the heat cycle, right? And so to say that she missed it because it was a little bit enlarged, but now knowing that there wasn't any bacteria at that stump of the uterus, I'm not sure we can say that she missed it.
I think I read the report entirely differently. Focusing on the necropsy report, at the uterine stump, she described, I'm not sure which, a 3 by 5 centimeter mass, black to red color, and on histopath contained numerous mats of coccibacteria along with fibrin, neutrophils, and hemorrhage at the stump. Mats of coccibacteria at the stump.
Yeah, but then there was the email correspondence back and forth where he stated that it wasn't like a pyometra, like there wasn't any evidence of that. So maybe I misspoke. There was bacteria because of the peritonitis, but like the change in the tissue of the uterus was not indicative of a pyometra.
Oh, I agree with that.
Right, so therefore, if we didn't have like any outward signs of suppurative infection of the uterus when we remove the uterus. It was enlarged, which could be consistent with in heat.
But we don't know if there was suppurative in that uterus. It wasn't open and looked at. And then it was gone. So that's why I focused on that particular histopath, because in a closed pyometra, no, you're not going to have infection in the tract.
Right.
The outflow, right. Out track in the vaginal region or the post the ligature cervix, if you will. That's good. You're not going to have infection there in a closed pile.
In a closed pile, but I guess when you're talking about a closed pile, there's changes in the uterine tissue itself that would be indicative of a pyometra.
Right.
Right. Those changes were not found in the tissue that was left behind in the uterine stump.
Okay.
Right, so.
And I guess my answer to that is pyometra could be segmented. Could be very segmented, especially in the beginning. So that's why I focused on that mm-hmm. particular part, because we're all trying, all of us are trying to decide where this bacteria came from.
Right.
And resulting in a septic peritonitis. The information we had, the very good information regarding cystic endometrial hyperplasia, which would have been one of the differentials, mm-hmm. because she described it as being very enlarged, swollen, and thickened. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of these, as you've seen more than me, probably, of these abnormal looking uterus. Is that heat? Is that not heat? Is that 6 year old? Is that hyperplasia? Is it what's the mucoid, mucometria? That whole description. But the description of that is it's sterile. Okay. As opposed to pyometra. Pyometra doesn't have to be full blown post heat. It can be insidious. It can be segmented. If segmented pyometra is a real thing, and it can happen. So, and then you can have this with repeated heats, and then eventually this unhealthy tissue. Now we have the introduction of bacteria. Now we do have an infected uterus, whether it fits the definition of pyometra or not. Yeah. We have endometritis, bacteria induced.
I hear what you're saying. I guess I also, knowing, having done multiple spays, and especially on kitty cats, right?
Sure.
The odds are you're going to have an indie uterus.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's, you see them day in, day out, right?
Sure.
So, but do you put every indie cat on antibiotics?
No.
No. So I guess that's where the struggle comes, right? Like, you see this as a practitioner. It looks very much like an in-heat uterus. So how is it missing an infection if it looked like an in-heat uterus?
So why do we have a discussion about cystic endometrial hyperplasia? We're having a discussion because it could have fit that. And if it could have fit that, it could have fit segmented, insidious, developing pyometra.
So but every heat cycle could fit that.
Well, sure, but we got a six-year-old cat with an abnormal uterus. So that was my concern. And so it comes down to, does it fall below the standard of care when a surgeon is faced with an abnormal uterus? Is it an abnormal uterus or is it a normal in-heat uterus? I don't want to make that error and make a decision at that point in time. So there are some things you can do. Now the HIST, sending the uterus in, I mean, how long does that take to get back? Would that even be a practical thing to do? I'm not talking about cost. That wouldn't have helped in this case. By the time it came back, and let's say it said, okay, there's bacteria in this uterus, the cat would have already had septic peritonitis. So I don't agree with that. But what could have been done? Okay, maybe I ought to open this uterus and take a look at it. Is that mucus or is that pus? I don't know. Well, I don't want to give antibiotics for whatever reason at this point, what we discussed here. So I'll make a swab of that. That doesn't cost anything or time. Make a swab. Is there bacteria there? I'm going to give antibiotics. For me, it would have been in a six-year-old cat with an abnormal uterus that might be hyperplasia, therefore could be pyometra, give antibiotic. In this case, that's not indiscriminate use of antibiotic. That's prophylactically going, this could be a problem uterus. So I guess our discussion we're having is this a absolutely normal in heat uterus, or is this a abnormal uterus?
Right, and from obviously neither of us were there, right? And I would say, knowing that in June, pretty much every cat uterus that you are going to find is going to be in heat, if not gravid. Like, that's just, that's sure. the season, right? So sure. on that note, is that then the expectation for just the standard of care to then open up every uterus that you pull out of a cat no. to ensure that that's not a situation?
That's not what I'm saying. I wouldn't do that. If I had a six-year-old cat and I was trying to make a determined whether this was a normal or abnormal uterus, then I would. But actually what I would have done is go, could be infected, I'm giving an antibiotic, I'm giving an injection of convenia. I'm gonna be proactive here. And that's not indiscriminate use of antibiotics. That's preventative. I mean, against the worst case scenario, which is where we went.
Yeah, but, so. But again, like every cat uterus, I mean, because it's not, there's cats of all ages that are coming in for those spays. It's not just one-year-old cats that you're like, oh, it's probably a low likelihood. Like every, you know, there's cats that run the gamut. And, you know, being at part of a high volume clinic, it's every day the docs are seeing something, mm-hmm. you know, and so, and starting in February, sure. all the cats are in heat or pregnant. Like sure. that's just the norm during that period of time.
So what we're really saying is neither one of us, like you said, were there.
Right.
So we have to make a determination, was this a normal in-heat uterus or was this an abnormal? The hindsight would suggest it wasn't. The statement that the bacteria was outside of the uterus can be explained by the fact that yeah, it was outside because it was there due to the incision of the stump and into this hematoma at the stump. Myriads of bacteria then got into the peritoneal cavity. So for me, the standard of care, was it met when the surgeon was faced with an abnormal? That's the case that you and I are discussing. Is this an abnormal uterus or was this a normal uterus?
So what is Dr. Byrne yeah. or Nikki. Mm-hmm. So you guys
well,
have each one now because you both, and I don't know.
Seeing it in the history of the cat previously, like being afebrile and didn't seem ill, I know I've done surgeries on animals that have had postoperative infections for no reason. Mm-hmm. And whether, I always am left to question whether the surgery was the thing that there was a low-grade infection or something, that you didn't recognize that you did the surgery and that was a stressor that allowed the infection to become more fulminant. But I do also use a lot of perioptic antibiotics.
Sure.
And having had that happen to you one time, anytime yeah. I castrate a horse or whatever, they get antibiotics for yeah. 5 days.
Well, they're also living in a little bit different environment.
Correct. So I guess the question I have is you can't really prove where the source of the
right.
bacteremia came from. So I'm not convinced either way that it came from inappropriate skin contact. I don't know. It seems like everything was done professionally, aseptically.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could just be, it happened. And I can't also convince myself if you had a low-grade pyometra that wasn't recognizable with clinical signs that are, you know, temperature elevations or whatnot, mm-hmm. that you didn't recognize that just the debridement of the uterus and removal of the nidus of the infection wouldn't have been somewhat curative too.
Sure.
So I am torn between what the source of the infection was, and I don't think you'll ever know.
No.
So.
For sure. No, that's why looking to the evidence,
but you're saying
the histopath of that hematoma at the stump.
But if an antibiotic had been given, this would have been a different outcome, or you still don't know?
Still don't know. Resistance?
Okay.
I mean, no. To Dr. Thompson's point, we're not going to culture every stump
okay,
either.
So.
Okay.
So I guess in this case, I would make a motion based on what was put in the consent agreement. I would dismiss that. Like I don't find that given the additional information that was provided. And so that would be my motion is to dismiss.
I'd second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2435 against Dr. Ale. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so it was 2 and 4, correct?
Which two were nays?
I think that was the other one.
Okay, so motion passes. This conclude, or sorry.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
So I do want to address the complainant's issue with not getting a phone call. And it's not necessarily, we can't say that it was necessarily Dr. Ale, but I don't know if there's a letter of concern to the practice in just the correspondence, like to the point that she's a contracted doctor, like that became a very large issue in this case, that the doctor was not made aware of a situation with that pet. And if there were repeated attempts to contact the clinic, and the clinic, maybe the manager is dealing with it or not, but the fact that the doctor wasn't able to get involved, is that something we should like try to encourage? Or, because I know me personally, I would want to know as a relief doc if right. something happened to one of my patients. Because that's really important in one, you know, trying to speak with the client to see what happened, and two, figuring out if there's something that you could have done better, right? So
Mark, if we don't have a case open, okay. So sorry. Okay. The board has voted to dismiss this case with no violation. This concludes this matter. And Dr. Ale, you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly. If anybody has any questions in the meantime, please contact the board's executive director, Victoria Whitmore. This concludes the informal interview. Thank you all for being here.